Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, and today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Amy Almeto. And with Amy's bio, I'm going to do this a little different. It's written in her words, and so her bio that I'm going to read is going to be from her perspective. When I was young, I dreamed of the perfect life, marrying the best man, raising three beautiful children, becoming a doctor, and living happily ever after. But life had different plans. At first, I thought I had it all, but the person I once was seemed to slip away as time passed. I no longer recognized myself, or at least the version of myself I had created during that time. In my mid-30s, I sat by the pool with friends, watching our children play. According to everyone, we were living the life. Yet an overwhelming dread washed over me. I thought, if this is life, I don't want it anymore. I had been enduring emotional abuse, and I knew I needed to leave my marriage. But I didn't know how. When I finally gathered the strength to leave, the devastation that followed was unimaginable. Then a car accident nearly killed me, leaving me with traumatic brain injury and physical pain. Yet I appeared fine. I had to fight, hiding my struggles to protect my children. Over the years, I did my best to rebuild my life, but a second car accident left me broken again and suffering as my body was physically shutting down, and I developed post-traumatic stress disorder. In my 40s, I longed for peace, wishing for release from the pain. Then I stumbled upon a shamanic journey, which renewed my spirit and significantly altered my path in life. Through more struggles, I rediscovered my purpose. Nature became my sanctuary, and in my 50s, I understood who I was meant to be in the world. Amy, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. I've been looking forward to having you on the program since our pre-chat.
Well, thank you. That sounded really fancy.
Well, you're welcome. And thank you for putting that together. That usually one of the first questions I will ask a guest contributor is tell us about the experiences that have shaped your life path and your life passions. But you've pretty much laid that out in your bio from, emotional abuse to not knowing where your place was in the world, determining what kind of a world you wanted to live in, the type of person you wanted to be, anything from PTSD to car accidents to near-death experiences. You've had that all in a short period of time. Is there anything else you would like to add to your bio that will give our audience an idea of who Amy Almeto is in the present?
In the present. So in the past 2.5 years, I created an LLC. I wrote the book that you're referring to. I bought 10 acres of reforested farmland, created a nature sanctuary, and I've already identified over 100 native species. We also expanded our honeybee farm to have 50 more colonies on site. And we just finished our house, got the keys 2 weeks ago, and we're in the process of moving in. So hopefully by this fall, we'll be up and running and be able to have at least our monthly gatherings. We want to have like a family style monthly gathering on a Sunday once a month to create a thriving community. What's very different about all of this is what I was talking to you about before we started is I just have this overwhelming sense of calm about me. The fear has sort of dissipated. The pain has dissipated. I feel like this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And I'm creating what I've always wanted, and I'm creating it with my own two hands.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the things that, you know, I've always believed that tragedy of any kind, whether it's a single tragedy or several really life-altering tragedies, has the opportunity to shape us. And the challenges with that can really help us find our true calling. And obviously, with everything you've been through, you have found your true calling with creating the retreat, creating a nature sanctuary, creating a community, which is so important, I think. You know, in any type of endeavor, to have that community and support, not just for yourself, but for everybody that's involved in the community. So it sounds like you are creating the reality for yourself in conjunction with the universe that you so desire.
Right. And one of the main goals for the retreat portion of our farm is, you know, everybody has experienced adversity. It doesn't matter who you are, what walk of life you came from, your background. Everybody's gone through something and it has altered their life. It could just be the natural progression of life. Your kids grow up and they go away. That could be adversity. Or, you know, some of the other things that I talk about in my book that we're going to talk about soon. So if you take the stigma away from it, and everybody gathers as a community because they love each other or they want to get to know each other or expand their base, then you can just talk about things and you can meet other people who have gone through the same stuff. And like, you have a companion to go through it with.
Absolutely. Humans need contact. We need support. We need validation. There's a difference between solitude in isolation, and we can't live in isolation, particularly during times of challenge. We need other individuals who get us, who understand us, and who will support us.
Exactly. Everybody who has come in contact with my sanctuary already, it has changed them. It has altered them. It has opened their eyes to new things. And I've invited everybody back. And hopefully when it's all ready to go, they'll come.
Well, the old saying from or line from Field of Dreams, if you build it, they will come.
So, oh my gosh, I've been telling myself that for a year. What am I doing?
Yeah, just like Kevin Costner's character said, in the world am I doing building a baseball field in the middle of farmland when I'm reducing my acreage and I'm reducing my income? But obviously the universe had a greater plan for that. And it's for Kevin Costner, it sounds like the universe has a greater plan for you too.
I think so. And so many people are so happy to have participated in creating this. Most of the community, it's an agricultural community, and they know that I'm doing the nature. I have 2 miles of nature trails. They know I'm creating it by hand, and they have absolute respect for what I'm doing. And it doesn't matter if they're young or old, they're coming and walking around and they're I can see the light in their eyes when they look at stuff, and that makes me happy.
And I think anything with nature, anything with the outdoors has such a grounding influence. We get so much peace just being out among the forest, among the trees, among animals, among flowers. I mean, nature has a indomitable spirit all of its own. It has a lot to teach us if we let it. So I want to jump to your book for a minute because I saw something on your website. I read this. People and the creatures of the land joined her to write, White Heron, a creation story. First of all, please tell our listeners about the book, what you want readers to take away from it. And secondly, how did this diverse community inspire you during the writing process?
So the book is pretty much what you said in the opening. It's all about my life, my experiences, different teaching points that are in there that helped me make sense of all of the good stuff and the bad stuff that I went through. In order for me to reconcile those issues, I made sense out of it, and I wanted to make sense to the reader. So if they're going through something, they have a greater understanding of different entities that have power and control over you and cause fear and anxiety and depression. So hopefully when they're going through it and they say, oh, gosh, that happened to me, here's something to go on instead of like, I'm lost, I'm lonely, I'm depressed, I'm isolated. Like you were talking about, you're not isolated. There are other people out there. So the people portion is probably a little bit easier because, of course, you can talk about people who, you know, showed up or the man who sold me the land or the man who's helping me create a sanctuary or my boyfriend who has the honeybees. But I'll tell you what, the turning point of me starting to write this book is there was about 2 miles of woods outside of my house. And I used to walk through these woods almost every day. It took me about 45 minutes to get down to the coast of the Cape Fear. I had been betrayed from work, personally, professionally. I wanted everybody in the world to leave me alone. And so when I went down to the Cape Fear, I wasn't angry. I was at such peace. And I was walking along and I saw these little things and I realized I was finding fossil. And I went home and I identified these fossils and they were millions of years old. They're actually more than 5 million years old because the megalodon teeth that is famous in North Carolina, they're real big, but more ancient sharks have smaller teeth with cusps on the side. So I was so super excited to be finding all of these fossils. And I absolutely fell in love with that little girl inside myself. And so even though I wanted the rest of the world to leave me alone, I was hanging out with my best friend, which just happened to be me. I started to emerge a different person, or maybe a better way to say it is I was emerging the person that I was as a child before all the bad stuff. And one day when I went down there, the builders had devastated the entire forest. 2 miles worth of forest was bulldozed in a couple of days. And all the trees were laying over and the red sap was going down. It looked like the trees were crying. And I was crying because my little sanctuary had been bulldozed. So I got down to the shore. I did my thing. I talked to this one kid that would ride his dirt bike by. And he gave me the phone number for his dad, who was the beekeeper. I didn't know Ken before this. And on the way back, I looked up into, they left like, you know how they leave little tiny patches of trees when they're bulldozing everything? There were hundreds and hundreds of birds sitting on these trees with the most gut-wrenching sound I have ever heard. And they were all crying and screeching because they had lost their home. And I hung my little hiking sandals up on the trees that were crying. And I picked up some little baby pine cones and I was holding them in my hand. And I said a prayer for an ending. And I was hoping it was a peaceful ending and that every creature who had lived in that forest would find a new home. And all the people that were buying new homes there would come here because they were looking for a new life. I went home that night and that was the first night I had met my current partner, my boyfriend. And in that same time period is when I got an offer from somebody to sponsor my book. And so this all happened in the matter, in the month of my birthday. My birthday's in March. And so I got an offer to write my book and I got that and everything just shifted. And I had always paid attention to things in nature, but now it was like it was becoming more frequent and more intense. And I could hear, not with my ears, more with my heart. I could hear what the animals were telling me. If I got caught on a certain place in my book, I would go for a walk and I would listen. And by the time I'd get back home, I had the answer and I knew what to write. And at the end of each chapter, I cried. It was like a melancholy type of cry. Like I went through that. It might have been joyful. It might have been painful. It might have been a lot of things. But my cry was very cathartic and it released all of those emotions. and it allowed me to move on to the next chapter.
Well, that's a powerful process, and it sounds like you were able to, through nature, your spirit was talking to you through all aspects of nature, and that helped you at least not only write the book, but also helped to maybe, if I'm interpreting this correctly, find some more clarity about yourself and help you make peace with everything that had happened in your past.
It did. It was very, gosh, I don't even know the right word. It was just very profound. Like, if I couldn't figure out how to finish something or how to say it productive, I mean, nobody wants to read a book where you're like, oh, that person's a jerk. Wait, that's not fun and creative. I didn't want to be hateful. I wanted my lesson to be fulfilled and complete inside of myself. And the only way I could do that was to say everything in the best way that I could say it and the most productive way to say it.
So what is the significance of the white heron in your spiritual journey?
So my whole life, I always joked about how my spirit animal was the blue heron. And when I would hike with my kids when we were little and we'd see a blue heron. I'm from Maryland. You don't see white herons in Maryland. They don't go that far north. But I would tell my son that they were dinosaurs. When we were hiking in the woods, when I saw them, it always gave me a sense of peace inside of myself, as if my hike was fulfilled because I saw them. Most of the time, at least up there, they are in solitude when you see them, and you can't get too close. I learned how to get pretty close by not being human. That doesn't sound right. Basically, I would think to myself, I'm not human. I'm meant to be here, and I could get very close to them. And then when I came down here to North Carolina, I actually found out that herons and egrets, they live in groups, close to each other. They don't like hang out on the same branch, but all different types of herons and egrets and other birds will live in branches right above the water, and they get along. They don't fuss or fight with each other, and it's really quite beautiful. And so I wanted to name my company, and I couldn't name it Blue Heron because I found out somebody else that I don't particularly care for chose that same business name. And he might be, used to be related to me. And I was enraged. And when I called my kids to complain, and they said, calm down, Mom, he didn't do it on purpose. But then I went for a walk that day, and there was white herons everywhere. And I thought, are you guys telling me something? And that's where the mythology part of my story comes in, is I wanted a really unique and creative way to say somebody stole my spirit animal, but I transcended into another spirit animal and left the other one behind. And so that's where white heron or creation story came into being. And the mythology part at the beginning is sort of an introduction, a prologue type of thing to the rest of the book.
Yeah, there's a saying from Native American culture that we don't see animals, they make themselves known to us. And I mean, obviously, it sounds like white heron made themselves known to you to say, hey, you're going to be my spirit animal now. And, you know, the other thing is that I believe that animals as well as nature have very rich teachings that if we are open to that, can help us find clarity, can help us engage in a program of self-improvement, however we choose to use those teachings. But whatever, yeah, you can look at online, or you can look at Native American readings and take a look at the meaning of animals, but that animal is going to have its own unique meaning to you. Herons might mean a sense of community to somebody else. They mean a sense of peace to you. For me, crow is one of my totem animals, and it has a lot of significant meaning for me. But one of the things that I always, when I see a crow, I always feel protected. And that may not be a teaching that's necessarily associated with crow, but for me, that's in addition to the traditional teachings, crow has that unique meaning for me in terms of being protected.
Yeah, when I see a red cardinal, I feel like my grandmother is present.
Yeah, and there's certain animals. Cardinals are is a bird that's a universal sign of a loved one's presence, a deceased loved one's or transitioned loved one's presence. Monarch butterflies, dragonflies, you know, all of those have been associated with after-death communication and with signs from our loved ones.
Yeah, I actually found that out as an adult, but she passed when I was six, and she's one of the spirits that helps me in ceremony all the time. I was very close with her, and even when I was a little girl, I felt her presence when the cardinals are around. So when I was older and I read that, I thought, oh, well, that's really cool.
Yeah, it's, you know, animals have so much to teach us if we let us. And, you know, they were here before we were. They were here before humans were. So they have every right to the land, and more so than maybe we do. I mean, we need to treat them as we would, but with reverence, with respect, and with honor.
Right. When I was creating the trails and I was, well, when I first got out there, it was a pretty dense forest/jungle type thing.
Yeah.
So I encountered lots of creatures and bugs and times and all kinds of stuff. But it was so strange because anytime I had like pending questions in my head, it was like a little animal would come along and like teach me a lesson or stare at me or do something. Like, I mean, I had a green snake, a beautiful emerald green snake, just sitting there staring at me while I was working for like 10 or 15 minutes and it was licking sap off the tree. And I was like, hello, little snake. But when I asked myself questions, I got answers and so on. And like the deer have come out to the animals come to watch me while I'm working in their home.
Well, you create a space for them to be welcomed and to create a sanctuary for them. And also you communicate with them. You learn from them. You value them. And it doesn't matter. The species are going to go where they feel valued. They know who respects them. They know where they feel safe, and that's where they're going to go.
Yeah, it's very humbling to have them watching me and not have any fear. It took me a little while to not be afraid of the big snakes, but I'm okay now.
Snakes have tremendous spiritual significance. They're typically associated with transmutation and transformation. You shed the old for the new. But you would see me run pretty quickly if I saw a snake in my path, especially poisonous. You'd be seeing probably the fastest 100-yard dash from a 70-year-old guy in the history of running. So how can communing with nature and animals, how can this help us cultivate spiritual awareness?
Well, one thing that I think is very amazing, and I need to do some more research on it, is when your land is healthy and your trees are healthy, you can actually see these little, like, energy. It's not a vortex. It's like energy lines, and it's not the sun. You know how you see, like, the little squiggles from the sun? It's the trees communicating with each other. And all the trees don't have it, but it's distinctly different on one side of the energy line than it is on the other side of the energy line. And after a rain, especially a really heavy rain, those lines are so apparent and they're so beautiful. I know that they emit essential oils. And when the rain comes down and hits the ground, it also brings up other types of things. Certain trees have certain healing properties than other trees. So they do differentiate. However, I don't know enough about it, but I do know how to see these lines. And when I point these lines out to other people and they see them, they are absolutely amazed. I feel that which I am doing, I'm not using power tools or any large machinery on the nature trails. So the health of it isn't being altered. I feel that when somebody comes to me with a certain problem, when I figure out which trees will help them the most, I can simply set up this. I'm going to have like Adirondack chairs and benches in certain places. And it's for, so you can go out, you can be peaceful, you can be in sanctuary, you can bring something to eat or drink or read. I'm going to have a little library of books. And if you go and hang out by these trees, I feel like you're going to absorb medicine just by breathing in this clean, fresh air. We're far enough out of this city. We're close enough to the ocean. So I feel like the land and the water, we have different water features there. I feel like it's just going to be very healthy. And if somebody wants me to try to do a healing for them, I can. And, you know, we can kind of take it from there. But I want to cater everybody's therapeutic experience to them. Like, I don't want somebody come and I'm going to go, oh, I'm going to do A, B, C, D. I'm going to come. I'm going to figure out who you are. You're going to figure out who I am. Because it's a reciprocal relationship. It's not, I'm not above you or below you or anything like that. We're going to work together and figure out how you can heal. So whether it's nature or herbs or spices, or maybe you actually have to go see a real doctor and rule out things. I did when I had some pretty bad health problems the past few years, and I went to a doctor, and when they ruled out everything, I was like, well, thank you. I mean, not thank you for charging me all this money, but thank you for telling me that according to your statistics, I'm totally healthy. So I knew that I had to heal myself emotionally, because your physical dis-ease and your emotional dis-ease combined, and that's what makes you sick. I have alleviated, I would say, probably about 90% of my symptoms that I didn't know the origin of, but I found them.
Well, you know, you bring up a really good point, is that I've always believed in an integrative approach to health, where Western medicine has its limitations, holistic practices can pick up the slack. For you, you know, you mentioned that, yeah, I needed Western medicine to rule out everything that was going on health-wise. They did that, and then you knew what course of action you need to take to find balance and to address your health issues. So I think there's room for both. And I think the integrative philosophy is something that you're going to see being more and more embraced. And that has helped me in the last really 10 plus years of my life. What does a healing look like? I mean, I know you cater to the individual. Is there a particular process that you follow when you're doing a healing with a specific individual?
Well, number one, I do like to get to know the person, because I usually have impressions. So like an impression could be something that I think or see inside my mind or feel or hear or taste. So I had to learn how to pay attention to my own senses. And the more I pay attention to what's going on inside of me, the more I understand what's going on inside of you. And so when I was young, I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to work with children. Where I was a Montessori school teacher for 6 years, and I was a counselor with emotionally disturbed children for 10 years. And that's kind of both ends of the spectrum. Like Montessori is sometimes kind of fluffy, and emotionally working in a treatment center is not so fluffy.
No. And I can say that being as a therapist for 27 years, no, there's no fluff about it at all. It's very challenging work. Mm-hmm. But rewarding work.
It was very rewarding. However, when I had my own kids, I had to stop. I didn't have enough emotional energy to work with kids all day and then come home to my own kids. That was too much, because I feel other people's feelings, and I have feelings about my own feelings, and I have feelings about their feelings. And so when I see something inside my mind, or when I put my hands on you and I feel the variations in your body, I feel like the vibrations, I feel temperature, I feel movement, I feel stagnation. And I don't have to touch people to do this, but I might see something in my head And I have to come up with neutral ways to ask people things so I don't lead them to an answer. I mean, as a teacher, you know that if you ask a neutral question or a question people can answer and not a like a yes or no type thing. And so when I ask people about those things, I've never actually been wrong, which is kind of amazing to me when I see things that are accurate. The majority of the time when I'm working with people, it usually brings them to some type of cathartic release, either an energy release, a heat release, and oftentimes it's followed with tears. And it's not tears because they're in pain, it's tears because they have such an emotional reaction to the process that I've been doing with them. And it's all based on love and trust.
Yeah, it would have to be. And it sounds like you're an empath to, you know, exponentially squared. I could see where absorbing other individuals' energies, especially with individuals who have their own traumas, that you could absorb that energy really, really easy.
I've had to learn how to stop when I get to a certain point with certain people. Because, well, if you're going to work in these types of realms, you have to be in touch with the light as well as the dark. Mm-hmm. And I do my best to avoid the dark. Whereas when I was younger, sometimes I would be like, it's okay. It's all right that it's dark. I can win. I can do it. I can beat it. And now I'm like, you know what? I don't want to do that. It is emotionally disruptive to me, and it takes me time to come back and be myself again.
And I know we talked about this during the pre-chat. We talked about sometimes the challenges you and other empaths have of staying in balance because they're absorbing so much, not only their own energy, but the energy of others. And when you're out of balance, and I know nature is probably a big part of you getting back in balance, is there anything else that helps you get in balance when you just feel overwhelmed by the energies that you're taking in, you know, from people and the environment around you?
Yeah, I actually developed this technique after my traumatic brain injury, and I have continued to use it. That was almost 20 years ago. The traumatic brain injury caused migraines, and they wanted me to take horrible medicine, and the medicine actually made me worse. I tried it a couple of times, and I thought, okay, I'm not doing this anymore. So I taught myself to, it's not really meditate, and it's not really take a nap. It's sort of like checking out, like force closing your computer or something, and I set my alarm for either 20 or 25 minutes, depending upon how awake I am. And I close my eyes and I sort of detach from reality. I let go. And when I let go of everything around me, I don't exactly know where I am or what I'm doing. It is like a huge release in my brain and in my body and in my stomach. When my alarm goes off at 20 minutes, I wake up and I'm refreshed.
Is there any out of body that goes with that as well, too?
It's not really out of body. It's more like out of situation. It's not like I'm out there looking at me. It's kind of like I'm nowhere. So whether I'm sitting in the chair or sitting in my car or sitting in the back office, when I used to work and like I could feel a migraine coming on, I would go into the back room and I would just schedule a phone call like that I didn't really have. And I would just check out for 20 minutes and I would come back out and I would be fine. I never took any more medication. It took me a few months to perfect it, but I've been doing it for 20 years. And I think I've only taken a leave maybe 5 times in 20 years when what I was doing didn't work. Like when the emotion was so overwhelming, I couldn't detach from it.
Well, that also gets to what you talked about before in terms of emotions and thoughts informing physical disease. And right. If we can manage our emotions, if we can manage our thoughts where they're productive and they're not contributing to physical ailments, we can stay healthier. I mean, obviously, we still need Western medicine, and we will still need Western medicine for a lot of things. But I think our physical health and how we feel about ourselves mentally and emotionally, I think, are connected.
Well, I'll tell you what, one of the main problems I was having the past couple of years is my hip and my knee, my left hip, knee, and foot were just not working. Like, I didn't know what was going on. And when I went to the doctor to figure out, because I couldn't hardly walk, I couldn't get up out of the chair by myself, I couldn't walk down steps, and it was completely debilitating. And when I went to the doctor, they just blurted out, like, oh, we're going to have to rule out cancer and blah, blah, blah. I mean, of course, all I heard was cancer. Mm-hmm. And I went from walking 6-7 miles a day to, like, I can't get out of my chair and get down the steps. Within a few months, it just got progressively worse. I think I spent like $20,000 going to all these different doctors to rule out every possible thing they could come up with. And nobody came up with anything. So I decided to have a ceremony by myself, and you have to pick like a mantra for whatever your ceremony is going to be that time. And I had an impression that when my dad was very young, he had polio, and he lived in the hospital from when he was 2 until 5. And all 3 of my sisters have had problems with their left hip and left knee. And I spoke to my youngest sister, who is a physical therapist. And she said, oh, I have to clear dad out of my hip quite often. And she doesn't really talk a lot. So for her to say that sentence was a really big deal. And so my mantra was, I love you and our purpose is one. Because I always had a contentious relationship with my father, but he passed away many years ago. And so I cannot be happy with the human things that he did, but I know that his spirit is alive and well, and he always had good intentions. He just didn't know how to execute them the right way. I guess I was probably the most non-compliant daughter that he had.
I could never imagine you and non-compliance in the same sentence.
You mean me and compliant or non-compliant?
I could never go, you and non-compliant, being facetious. I could, because I could imagine that you pretty much were a very, let's say, a spirit that was not meant to be tied down.
No, and that was all about my upbringing, is be independent and self-sufficient, but do it my way.
That's right.
And you're like, well, you know, that really doesn't make sense.
But you know, I think it does. I look at my daughter, Janine, who transitioned over 22 years ago, and she was a free spirit. And she taught me a lot about parenting. She taught me a lot about free spirits, is that free spirits are not meant to be tied down. They're not meant to be reined in. They're meant to be guided. And given options. And for that, I always let my free-spirited daughter know that if things turn to crap with what you're deciding to do, know that I'm here and we can talk about it. If I had tried to tell her, don't do this, then she was going to find a way to do it. So it's so non-compliance non-compliance was something that was in my daughter, went hand in hand. She thought conventional wisdom was highly overrated. So with that, I didn't mean to cut you off with that. So go ahead.
No. I think me and your daughter would have gotten along.
You would have gotten a hell of a lot of trouble together. I would tell you that, I think. But it would have been good. It would have been good trouble.
Good trouble. What's that expression? Well-behaved women rarely make history, or something like that.
Absolutely. So.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, did I answer your question?
Yeah, I think you did answer it, and I think we just went off into one of those other categories. But yeah, you did. You answered it quite well. And then
I know what I was going to say. So, I went on a journey in ceremony by myself, It was a very long meditation, about 4 hours. I went in and out of various meditations, but in between most of them, I went back. I found my father when he was 4 years old, and I didn't call him dad, obviously. He was four. So I called him by Joey, and I took his polio braces off, and I watched him run through a golden field of wheat. And I was crying super hot tears. And that's how I know when healing is taking place, because my tears are very hot. And then I went and found his mother. And again, I couldn't call her grandma. But I said, I'm so sorry they took your baby away, but they took him away to keep him safe so he could live. And I cried with her too. About 2 hours after I was done with this, my hip, my knee, and my ankle were better. They were cured. They're about 95% better than they were. And I thought, maybe this is my imagination. Maybe this is crazy. But it has been 3.5 months, and I feel spectacular. And it all went away in 2 hours.
And, you know, that is something that I would just look at and say, just behold the magic and the awe in the universe, that things happen that there's no scientific explanation for, but we know them to be real. It sounds like you did some really meaningful work during your meditation. It sounds like you journeyed a little bit, and you went back to, and you did some healing in the process and got a better understanding of maybe a little bit of your ancestral tree and some of the motivations of your ancestors. And I know in the work that I did after my daughter transitioned, that translated into ancestral healing, where I forgave the father who abandoned me when I was 5 years old. And I understood the reasons that my mother overprotected me after he left. And it was all because of work I did with a shamanic practitioner and an interfaith minister by the name of Reverend Patty Farino, who facilitated a spiritual trance experience that allowed me to find peace with my daughter's passing. But all of that helped me find peace with my father's decision to leave, realizing that his abandonment was not an act of anger, it was an act of love, because he didn't want my mother and I to not thrive. And I understood my mother's reasons for overprotecting me due to a session I had with a shamanic holistic practitioner who I've been working with for a few years. And, you know, emotionally, I felt better about myself. And who knows, I might have even translated Amy into me feeling physically better about myself as well, too.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's beautiful. And when I told my mom about it, I was a little apprehensive about telling my mom, because she's very Catholic and everything. But I told her, and she's 89 years old, and she just looked at me and she smiled and she said, you do know your father had a field of wheat, right? I said, no, I never knew that. The following week, I was at my neighbor's house, and his wheat was bright gold, and a bright red cardinal flew and landed on it about 40 feet from me. The sun was intense on it, and it just looked so beautiful, and I knew it was real.
You know, it's funny, when you were talking about fields of wheat, I was automatically thinking of Sting's song, Field of Gold. And, you know, there's this little boy walking through a field of gold, and yeah, that was immediately what came to mind when you were talking about your, you know, the field of wheat with your dad.
That's beautiful. That is actually one thing I forgot to mention with my healings, is that I play music without words. And when I do sort of like I move energy, like it's sort of like a therapeutic massage, but not exactly. But I put the music on and I put the music into the places where the pain should be, and I take the pain out.
Now, does the music you pick, is that specific to the energy that you read from the particular client that you have, you're working with at that time?
Yeah, sort of like when I find a spot that has an issue, I work on it through a song. And it's really amazing to me, because the song could be 3 minutes long or 10 minutes long, and I wouldn't know the difference. music has actually been researched, and it fills a lot of the same receptors as pain. And so that gave me a little bit of understanding about how I work that music in with my hands into their muscles or their joints or whatever like that. But I actually pull the pain out, usually from extremities like your feet or your hands, or I might take it out of a large part like your knees or your hips or something. But when the song is over, I can feel something, and then I send the pain back to the light, or I send the discomfort back to the light, or the sadness. And it's sort of like an ending in the middle. So you have several pauses, several like hiatuses in between the songs.
That sounds interesting. And I know music is very therapeutic for a lot of reasons. I know it helps people get in touch with their emotions during challenging times. It provides comfort. And I know that when I'm in a session with my shamanic holistic practitioner, she'll play specific type of music. Some will be Native American music. Others will be kind of Zen yoga music, depending on how she's reading my energy at that particular moment. Whatever she picks works.
Yeah.
I feel much better coming out than I did going in, and much more grounded.
Right, exactly.
So, in your bio, and I know you have mentioned embracing all of who you are in your experiences to get back to your true self. And I know when embracing all of who we are means we take a look at the experiences that are not necessarily classified as happy or positive experiences. Was that necessary for you to look at everything? And how did that help you graduate or grow into your true authentic self today?
Not just me, but I think everybody, if you have the right intentions, when you're growing up, like, you're not the same person in your 20s or 30s or 50s or 80s, you know, you're just not the same. And even if you have the right intentions when, say, you're 25 or 30, you might not use the most awesome words or the best actions. Like, you might be a jerk, you know, when things don't go your way. All of those lessons, they add up. And as long as you are you and you're an impeccable person and you want to do the right thing and you stay true to yourself, gradually when you get older, I think that's part of my calmness lately, is when things don't go my way, I've learned how to stay calm. And part of my brain might still be thinking those bad words, but I have learned how to extract the lesson and the intention without all of the emotion. And it's very vindicating because I'm still getting the same end result, but I feel so much better in the meantime. And the person I'm speaking to feels so much better in the long run as well.
You know, I think you make a really great point, because I think as we get older, and particularly the experiences that we've had that have shaped us, whether it's tragedy or other other life-altering transitions that we have to deal with, I think we become more mindful of our words in terms of how we come across. Like, for example, for me, I do a lot of bereavement support. So I'm mindful of the words that I'll use. I'll tune into, how does this person conceptualize death? Well, I conceptualize it as transition, but that person might conceptualize it as passing on or walking on, if we're looking in the Native American tradition. So I'll work with that verbiage. The other thing is, I'm also mindful of what I could say that might unintentionally trigger an emotional response. So I'll rehearse what it is I want to say. I'll take a look at the person's situation and say, if I was in that situation, if I was that person, how would I want to be approached? What words would I want to have used to address me? What words wouldn't I want to have used? And as I become older, I become more mindful, because there's certain words you can apologize for, but you can't take them back. I don't want to do irreparable harm to somebody just because of what I say or because of what I do.
Exactly. And for all the good stuff and all the bad stuff that I've been through, I have, And I always thought that I was pretty empathic and pretty intuitive. But the older I get and the calmer I get and the more I listen, I'm so much more empathic and intuitive than I ever knew. And I've been trying to expand upon these things and meet other people who have some of the similar philosophies than I do. It's honestly kind of hard because there's a lot of fake healers out there, a lot of fake shamans, a lot of fake this and fake that, and know that they can read your cards or heal your chakras or something. But, you know, like, there are really amazing people out there who have amazing gifts, and that's what I want to do. I used to hide my gift all the time, hid them because I didn't want to be labeled as weird or make people uncomfortable. Or, you know, if you go, my kids went to a Catholic school. If you say something outside of whatever they believe, then, you know, there's something wrong with you. And I'm like, you know what? There isn't anything wrong with me. I'm expanding upon the sense of spirituality because we're all related. We're all one. We're not separate.
No. And, you know, the way you look, the way you see the world, you see the world on a variety of different levels. I mean, you think multidimensionally, you see the world multidimensionally, you have your own unique relationship with nature, and there's nothing wrong with that. I have people in my circle now, Amy, who are like you, who are very empathic, who are very intuitive. I have others who are grounded. I have others that vacillate between being grounded and being very intuitive. It all works because they all offer me a perspective on life that I wouldn't have otherwise. I can learn from everybody. To me, the way you see the world is beautiful, and there's nothing weird about it. I can sit and I can learn from that. And I mean, it would be a dull world if we were all the same, because we wouldn't learn from anybody. We'd just all be existing. There'd be no growth.
I think part of the big lesson that I had, which completely altered my life, was I did have that big corporate job. I did make a lot of money. I understand all this crazy worldly stuff and the politics and the control and the money. I understand those things, but I'm choosing to walk away from it. You know, I chose to walk away from it 5 years ago when I moved here because I didn't. To raise my children, I had to raise my kids by myself. And for God's sake, they ate food every day and wore clothes. So I did what I needed to do financially to have a house and a car and successful children and have them move on in life. And now I'm doing what genuinely makes me happy. And there were happy moments in all that crazy stuff I was doing in the last few years I lived in Maryland. I did $56 million worth of projects on time and under budget. So me doing my retreat out there is like pretty easy compared to all the other craziness. And like, I'm the boss.
You can be the master of your own destiny. You can empower yourself to be whoever you want to be. And if we can love ourselves, we can love everybody else.
Exactly. I'll be able to help people who already see nature the way that I do. What I have helped a lot of people do, a lot of high-level people, is just stop and pay attention. You know, look at the sunrise, look at the sunset. Mm-hmm. You know, so my mom always used to say, stop and smell the roses. So like, pay attention, you guys, because the world's going on with or without you.
Yeah, we can develop awareness through using stuff in the physical world, using nature, using everything around us to develop some type of clarity and awareness. And spirituality and spiritual growth is such an individualized process that can occur from a variety of different angles. But as long as we commit to walking in awareness, clarity can soon be ours. So we are getting close to our time, and I could sit and talk to you for about another hour. Because this has just been a very enlightening and just a great far-reaching conversation. But I do want to ask you a couple of more questions. And the first is, if you were going to leave our listeners with just one thing, one takeaway today, what would that be?
If you're waiting to be happy, just stop waiting. Stop, pay attention, listen to yourself. If you're sad or you're lonely or you're in pain, You know, you don't have to mask it. You can change your life starting today with little tiny things. And what I call it is like preparing the garden. And it's your garden and it's your life. And you have to, you know, do you want dirt or soil? Do you want like good seeds or bad seeds? Because once you plant that seed, it's going to continue to grow. And if you're in fertile soil and you plant a good seed, you will grow and you will blossom into something more beautiful. And it takes time and it takes work. You have to just know that you're not alone and other people have had the same types of sufferings that you have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. When we go through tragedy, we think we're the only one going through tragedy, even though intellectually we know we're not. But yeah. Emotionally, we feel that nobody else can understand us. And when you find a community that has had similar experiences, you realize that you're not alone. And it makes the pain easier to deal with because you can share that pain with other individuals who understand and they'll validate it and tell you what's worked for them to help you manage it.
And it's like if you want a healthy tree in your yard, you have to prune it. You have to fertilize it and everything. Yep. And you have to do that in your life. Because you'll have friends of the road and you'll have lifelong friends. And friends of the road, they come, they go. They might be in your life for a day or a year or a few years. But there's a time to move on. And just move on peacefully. You don't have to move on in a hateful way. But find people who help you serve your purpose. And your purpose is to be happy, is to be you, is to fulfill what you're supposed to do in this life.
Absolutely. Amy, my last question for you is if people want to get in touch with you, contract for your services, purchase your book, what's the best way for them to do that?
I have a website. It's whiteheron.us, WHITEHERON, but it's .us, not .com, or you'll get like an architecture company or something. My book's also on Amazon, and I'll have a new one coming out within the year, and it's called Alexander, Unearthing an Immortal Love Story. And it's all about how you fall in love and stay in love with the worst parts of yourself.
I like that. And that sounds like when the book comes out, that might be, if you're open to it, another follow-up podcast conversation about your book.
That would be wonderful. Oh, and if anybody wants to learn about honeybees or do research with honeybees or find out all the wonderful medicinal effects of honeybees, we are open to that. My boyfriend's a master beekeeper. He's been doing it for 20 years. We're actually starting a nationwide endeavor to help improve our honeybee population.
Wonderful. And anything that we can do to preserve the environment, preserve our creatures that live in the environment and allow them to thrive, I'm all for it. So I wish you well and Ken well in that endeavor as well too. So Amy, you're welcome. And thank you so much for spending time with me this evening. I enjoyed our conversation. And again, I hope we can do this in the future.
I would love to.
And with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.